You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So what are we smoking today, Brad? We got a little something special here.
Yeah, we've got LH Cigars, Colorado cigar here. And for those who don't know, LH stands for La Vida Habana. And, you know, you'll...
Living La Vida Habana.
Yeah, I mean, it's a catchy tune, but... I gotta say, man, this Colorado blend, I had the privilege of sitting down and smoking one of the Maduros, but, you know, the Colorado, with its medium full body, it's sporting the Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, Nicaraguan binders and fillers, and, you know, as well as some fillers from Peru and a couple of other places, and it's a phenomenal smoke.
I mean I was so ready to like smoke this cigar I almost forgot to take the photo for the website. I was like, oh crap, I've already lit it. But if anyone's not familiar with LH cigars, they're relatively new to the United States market. They started off as a making cigars for private individuals, and eventually opened up a bunch of high-end shops in the Middle East. But now they're just kind of getting into the American market. And as you'll hear later, we have an interview. We're able to sit down with Nicholas Siris of LH Cigars and Giannis the Cigar Tailor, our local rep that's trying to get these out into as many stores as possible. So when you go to your regular brick and mortars, you know, request this cigar and, you know, try to help them out and help yourself out by getting a hold of a few of these.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just digging the, the notes of this cigar. I mean, it's for a medium cigar, it's quite complex. I mean, it almost has a sweet fruity essence. And then, you know, a couple of draws later, you're getting some, you know, woody, a little bit of oaky, and, you know, it's... You know, and a very enjoyable smoke. I mean, it's keeping me, you know, very engaged and holding my attention. And I mean, I'm just indulging this thing.
Yeah, and these they're all rolled with a closed foot. So your first couple of puffs, you're getting the straight wrapper flavor, and then the Nicaraguan binder and filler, all that stuff kicks in, and the flavor just changes as you go along. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got. You know, notes of honey, molasses, tea, you know, some like dried fruit, maple and vanilla flavors. I mean, I'd love to try to pair this with either bourbon, maybe a little bit too strong, but a nice rum would probably go well with this.
Yeah, that was my initial thoughts is, you know, just a touch of sweetness from the rum with this cigar would be a deadly combination.
And later on in our interview, we were smoking their Maduro line, so you're actually getting two cigar reviews for one this episode. Bonus.
Absolutely.
Our little Christmas gift.
And speaking of Christmas gift, what do we have in store for the fine folks regarding this episode?
Oh, yeah, this is our Christmas episode, and, you know, as most things, I mean, last year we did the un-Christmas movies, but this time of year you usually get bombarded with all kind of Christmas movies, and not all of them are good. So we're going to talk about some of the, in our opinion, worst Christmas movies of at least, you know, the recent last 20 years or so.
And then we'll even give a shout out to some of the, you know, movies that we actually recommend folks to go see.
Yeah, so we're going to tell you what not to watch this Christmas, and then give you some good alternative choices if you want to see a nice feel-good holiday film. Instead of watching the traditional, you know, Rudolph the Reindeer for the 150th time.
Yeah, I don't know about, feel good, but, I mean, we enjoyed the films.
Hey, man, it's not Christmas until I see Die Hard. I mean.
Yeah, I could see where you're going with that. So, All righty. Any additional?
Nothing says Christmas like blowing up Nakatomi Towers. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Ho! Ho! When it's Christmas time, everybody's waiting in a big ass line. Just sitting on my lap and beg for Elmo's iPads and crap, yeah. Brats are out of control, my elves are doing nothing but shoveling coal. Older girls sit on me and get their picture taken ironically. Hey, girl, look at that belly, like a bowl full of jelly. As seen on the telly, it sticks out. I come down your chimney, though it don't quite fit me. Why do I smell kindling? Put it out. My doctor told me I had diabetes. That's what happens when you eat 100 billion cookies. I still deliver all this booty. It don't matter if it's drizzling, freezing, sleeting, blowing, snowing. I'm Santa and I know it.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's all Christmassy up in here. We're jingling bells. We're building gingerbread houses. Doing Christmassy shit.
We got the nerd tree up with a weeping angel looking over us. So my eyes are probably going to be really tired at the end of this podcast from not being able to blink. I haven't tried it yet to see if it works. Ooh, new podcast game. When the Christmas weeping angel is on the tree, no blinking in the nerd cave.
Oh yeah!
Will like, you survive?
It's not Christmas, and unless the we came with like a whole different Christmas story about you know the weeping angels and whatnot. Yeah, but anyway, we digress. one of the things that always happens inevitably this time of year is watching Christmas movies, Christmas TV specials, and not all of them are good.
You mean people spend time with their families and sit in front of the idiot box?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I was at Walmart last night. I swear to God, everybody in the state of Georgia was at fucking Walmart. Like, I don't think just watching Christmas movies is a thing anymore.
They all DVR them nowadays.
Everybody's just, you know, consumer, consumer, consumer.
I mean, those freaking Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Frosty the Snowman, those Christmas specials they play every single year since what, the 50s. I mean, it's not Christmas unless you've, you know, watched a Christmas movie. But for me, you know, Christmas movies for me is like, it's not Christmas unless I've seen Hans Gruber fall off of Nakatomi Towers or you know, watch Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, but we've already talked about that last year, so rather than give you guys a rundown or folks a rundown of last year's pod,
we're gonna give you a warning, a holiday suggestion of movies you probably don't want to waste your time watching. This is going to be our bad Christmas movie special
that are actually truly Christmas movies,
and then we might give you some suggestions of some better nerd approved Christmas specials at the end of the episode.
Yeah, don't count on it. We'll forget by then.
So what's the first on your list there?
You know what? I guess since we just had this big release of I don't even know about a big release. I don't know. There's this rumor that some film just came out that's in theaters right now that, you know, all kinds of nerds and geeks and, you know, just people trying to relive their childhood alike. Something about Star Wars. So I was like, what the hell can we do Star Wars Christmas related? And then a little terrible movie comes to mind called Star Wars The Holiday Special.
Oh, yes. Horrendous is the only way to describe the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Like, I'm not quite sure if I'm watching Star Wars or The Brady Bunch. Like,
it's so bad that it only aired once on TV. And then it, not only did it only air once, it's never been officially released in any kind of capacity, format, whatever.
I mean,
the only way you could, I mean, for a long time, it was like a bootleg thing you found at conventions.
So let me ask you, how did you go about watching this film?
Well, now it's on YouTube.
That's where I found it. And I was like, all right, any full-length movie that, you know, hasn't been stripped because of copyright infringement and stuff like that from YouTube, like, you know, it's got to be bad.
Which is funny is, like, in the version I watched, the only thing that was pulled for copyright was the cartoon segment. Because that was the only part of the movie worth watching. And I found a copy of it separately and watched the cartoon. But that's really the only good thing to come out of the Star Wars Holiday Special was the animated segment they had in there, which actually introduced Boba Fett for the first time.
I mean, I will say that I got a pretty sweet nap out of the film. I mean, that's where it led me. And then I was like, shit, I've actually got to talk about this thing? Fuck. So I, yeah. It, you know, had to go back and watch it in its entirety.
Released in 1978, the year after Star Wars had been out a year by this point, directed by Steve Binder, who apparently was like a big variety show guy. So it's kind of formatted like those old 70s variety shows you used to see where there's like just random song and dance numbers for like no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I thought one of the interesting things was, you know, this film actually preempted Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk, you know, on the Canadian...
Apparently, 78 was like a big nerd year for TV, man. There was like a lot of shit on TV then.
I don't know. Maybe that's where the nerd breakout, you know, actually happened. Like, you know, maybe... I don't know. You were what?
I wasn't born in 78, yeah, like, so...
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to figure out what happened in 78 that created, you know, kind of
But
like
I was
the...
born in 79, so maybe this is, like, why I was born, that my parents were so bored from this, they had to, you know, go
they
have
procreated.
Me.
Like, shit, TV sucks. I guess we'll go have sex, and out comes little Joe Harris.
Like, well, this was in November. I was born in March, so the math doesn't quite add up. But yeah, there's probably a lot of babies that were born because of this.
You were a miracle birth.
But
it
I mean,
it's a Christmas holiday. You know, Jesus was born of a virgin.
For anyone who has not seen it, basically there's a holiday in the Star Wars called Life Day, and Chewbacca is trying to get back to his home planet to have Life Day with his family, which is the first time they've introduced these characters, which the characters of his wife, Mala, son Lumpy, and Grandpa Itchy, which...
Just sounds like a bad elf name.
Well, they kind of explain that those are like nicknames, like calling Chewbacca Chewy. They had like actual longer names, but like in the...
Like, oh, this Wookiee's got a bad case of fleas. Itchy.
Like his real name is like Atichikook or something like that. Like, but you know, those characters they introduced there actually went on into the expanded universe, and even you know, Chewbacca's father ended up in episode 3, Attack of the Clones, you see. But the version that's in the Star Wars Holiday Special will give you nightmares. I mean, he is the creepiest looking Wookiee I have ever seen.
I don't know. I did see a meme where Chewbacca smiles, and that was kind of creepy in itself. I don't know, man. It's really weird, you know, while we're talking about Wookiees, because there's a whole thing where, like, all the Wookiees gather, and there's no subtitles. So you're just wondering, what the fuck is going on in their heads? What are they talking about? Like, there's no Han. There's nobody to reiterate, to at least get a partial conversation going. So it's just like, what the actual fuck is happening?
I mean, that's the one thing where you see, like, Chewbacca when he's surrounded by a bunch of humans. You at least get half of a conversation, so you can kind of understand what Chewie's talking about based on everyone else's reaction. But there's probably a good 5-10 minutes at the start of it where it's just a family of Wookiees talking with no subtitles, no nothing, and you have no clue what's going on.
Or, you know what, you know, and maybe it's unfair. Maybe the person that, you know, uploaded the YouTube video or whatever, maybe they didn't know how to, you know, code the subtitles or
something. No, that's how it's... Everything I've read or seen on it, that's how it originally aired with just straight up 10 minutes of
I don't know, late Wookiee 70s. Talk. I mean, there's still a lot of LSD and stuff going on at that time. I mean...
That could have been the reason that we weren't high enough to understand.
Do enough LSD, and all of a sudden the Wookiees are speaking plain English, and it all makes sense.
And it's like a series of like sketch comedy things in between this whole story of Chewie trying to get home and his family dealing with like Imperials searching the place and random comedy bit. I mean, there's even a music video by Jefferson Starship, whatever the hell that old 70s band is, that they use to distract some Imperials. It's so weird. Yes. And then at one point they make them watch a video that's like required watching for Imperials to show how bad life on Tatooine is to make everyone else feel better, and you end up getting a whole song number by Golden Girl B. Arthur, who runs a bar on Tatooine. And then the probably the highlight at the end of it is Carrie Fisher singing a Life Day song to the theme of Star Wars that, you know, apparently we didn't know had actual lyrics, but it's just so bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's what a prime example of what happens when you don't let George Lucas have any input and you just kind of go on a tangent. Like, you know, one of the notes here is like, yeah, we're not entirely sure this film wasn't directed around a bag of cocaine.
Yeah, that's the only thing that can explain this movie. And, like, it's bad 70s special effects.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas met Star Wars. Like, this, it might almost make sense. Yeah.
Like, all the, and there's all these, like, space battle scenes that are all just cut from stock footage from Star Wars, edited into this thing to make it look like, you know, but then, like, the rest of the time, like, you know, Star Wars made in 77, it still looks good today. This looks like bad 70s TV sci-fi. It's just so weird to see that these characters in this just weird Pee-wee's Playhouse version of Star Wars.
Wow. That was scary. You just referenced Pee-wee's Playhouse. We'll not go down that dusty road.
It's a great show, man.
I mean, for this film to be so bad and for nobody to talk about this film, like, when you talk about Star Wars, like, it's funny that this is never comes up in any conversation.
Like I said, it used to be so rare that it was like a thing that you tried to find at, like, conventions and stuff, and then you see it and you're like, oh my god, this is 2 hours of my life I will never get back.
So, yep.
Like I said, that cartoon of Boba Fett, worth watching if you can find just that edit. The rest of the movie, unless you're on a lot of drugs, makes no sense whatsoever.
And we're not condoning folks to go out and do a bunch of drugs just to get through this movie.
But if you do a bunch of drugs, watch the Star Wars Holiday Special.
All right, so, enough about... We gave this film 11 minutes, more than I think the internet has ever given this film. So I'm going to digress, and Joe, what's next on your horrible, Christmas movie list?
Well, we were talking earlier about the commercialization of Christmas and how bad that's gotten. The movie kind of embraces that all-American commercialism, starring one of my favorite cigar nerds himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, in Jingle All the Way.
Yeah, so Jingle All the Way, 1996, directed by Brian Levent, and like you said, Schwarzenegger, Sinbad, Phil Hartman, Rita Wilson.
If anybody doesn't know who Sinbad is, back in the 90s kids, Sinbad was a comedian.
Sinbad was a big household name. Like, yeah, who is, you didn't, like, talk about comedy without talking. I mean, Sinbad was almost the awesome, the Tyler Perry equivalent, like, back in the day. Like, that's one guy
was,
that,
like,
is really
everything and has, like, really, like, disappeared. I've not seen.
Like, I was about to say
Sinbad in a while.
What's happened? Is he still living?
I think he's alive, but I've not. I've not Googled
Sinbad.
Not flying
to see
around
on any
still,
carpets or anything as of late.
But I was disappointed when I watched the movie Sinbad and it wasn't about Sinbad. It was like some kind of Greek stuff. But, I mean, this movie had a good cast. I mean, it had, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger playing a overworking father who neglects his family. And so to make up for, you know, missing his kids, like, karate practice, like, I'm going to get him the one gift he wants, which is a Turbo Man action figure on Christmas Eve. And apparently, if anyone remembers, like, hell, I worked at a Walmart back in the day, freaking the Tickle Me Elmo,
I think is
there were fights breaking out over that. The holiday Barbies, there was a couple fights broke out over that. Furbies when they first came out. Yeah. There's all, it seemed like every year there's some kind of toy that just blows up and the demand does not meet the supply, and then people are scrambling,
the demand
fighting,
far exceeds the supply.
Are so spending insane amounts of money on eBay trying to secure these things. And it's him battling a postal worker who kind of becomes his foe in this movie, played by Sinbad, which originally the role was supposed to go to Joe Pesci, which is weird in itself. And also, speaking of Star Wars, Arnold Schwarzenegger's child in the movie is played by Jake Lloyd, little Anakin Skywalker from The Phantom Menace.
Damn.
Which I think is probably one of the two movies he's ever done. Now he's starring in, police footage on the nightly news as he gets arrested for running from the cops.
So, I was just reading here. So, part of this film, received a lot of negative press, strictly, from that consumerism aspect. But, you know what? I think what people's problem is, especially looking at today's society versus, I don't know, nearly 15 years ago. Holy shit.
Yeah, and this was pre-internet, because there are people like, why is everybody fighting over toys? Amazon that shit. You couldn't Amazon the stuff back in the day. You literally had to go fight people at Walmart to get a toy.
Our toys are us. I mean, they were a major player back then. Not so much a major player today, but...
Oh.
That was one of the reasons the film... And then apparently, Fox was ordered to pay like $19 million to Murray Hill Publishing for stealing the idea for the film.
But it had a great cast. I mean... Phil Hartman was in it. And Phil Hartman is probably one of the greatest people to come out of Saturday Night Live. Always like the hilarious straight man who was like a divorced dad who was like the perfect dad. He got his kid the present, and really made Arnold look bad to his family because dude's also trying to hit on his wife. And this dude is the perfect dad apparently, and so everything every time Arnold fails, this guy has done something better, and it's just so hilarious the shit Arnold goes through in this movie trying to secure a freaking toy. I mean, there's even Jim Belushi is in it as a mall Santa who is running a toy counterfeiting ring who tries to sell Arnold a counterfeit Turbo Man, and which precedes a giant fight between Arnold and 20 Santa Clauses. It's
you don't want to get in a brawl with that gang.
Bizarre action sequence I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Yeah, which is crazy because Arnold almost gets arrested from the police officer that pulled him over previously for the traffic stop when, they do their whole raid on the, freaking counterfeit warehouse. It's just crazy. It's so over the top that it's almost believable.
And then eventually Arnold, trying to make up his failure to his kid, goes to some holiday parade and ends up becoming... Turbo Man himself steals the costume from the actor who's supposed to portray Turbo Man in the parade, and Sinbad of course gets Turbo Man's arch enemy's costume, and they have this big fight in the middle of the parade, and everybody thinks it's just part of the show because they're dressed in characters, and this gets so freaking weird.
Yeah, I mean it just it wasn't a terrible movie, I guess. I mean...
I'm Turbo Man.
Wow. Now, that was terrible. I guess just the ideology behind it people didn't agree with, which I think a lot of times they're just not willing to look in the mirror and admit to themselves who they really are. But
what people don't agree with is Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to do comedy. I mean, has he ever made a good... comedy that it was not an action comedy but a straight up comedy with no typical Arnold Schwarzenegger? Because I say Kindergarten Cop, comedy but action comedy.
He had some good one-liners in the Terminator franchise, but once again, action.
But Twins, Junior, anytime Arnold is tried to go straight up comedy, it has just not ended well.
Was Junior designed to be a comedy? I don't even remember that film hardly.
I think that was
the
one
where
Arnold
where the man
was...
gets pregnant or
yes,
something.
Yes, where Arnold's pregnant. That's.
I think that's my mom convinced me to go see that. Apparently that was one of those must see heartfelt movies, and I think I fell asleep. Mom, that's why we don't go to theaters together.
Yeah, go back to making,
Just be a badass,
make a Terminator holiday special if you have to, but yeah, this, no bueno.
The Terminator holiday special. Like, I feel like that needs to be a fan film at least, like, you know, maybe get the guys from
just re-edit it and like replace the plasma rifles with candy canes and like put little Christmas hats on the Terminator.
Yeah, maybe we should reach out to the guys of Austrian Death Machine and see if they can get their freaking Arnold suit out there and do some jingle bells or something.
jingle bells. Jingle all the way. All
right, we're going to move on to a different topic. Yeah, so apparently this film was horrible. It also spun a horrible spinoff called Jingle All the Way 2, which nobody knew what the hell that movie was. I didn't even know there was a second one.
Existed.
Basically went straight to video, and I don't think it was any better there. So
what else you got?
All right, for me, let's... I don't know. A film that I didn't think was entirely terrible... Let's talk about Ernest Saves Christmas.
You know, it's as much as I wanted to hate on this film, I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I would almost put that into my like suggestion bin.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't. I guess maybe because it's been so long since I really sat down and watched an Ernest movie that going back and seeing this on Netflix, I was like, oh shit, this is funny. Like. And I forgot how good of an actor he really is. Like, you know, all the different...
We need to add an Ernest episode to our list of upcoming shows.
Dibs. All right, there we go. All right. We call dibs, so it's a go.
All right, yeah. We haven't made our 2016 list yet, so we're taking suggestions. I think that's one. It's made the list.
Yep. So this film was, 1988, directed by John R. Cherry III and starring Jim Varney. And like I said, this was not a terrible film in my opinion. I mean, it is weird that, you know, Santa Claus has to like, you know, pass the torch on, so to speak, to a different Santa. So the whole premise is basically the real Santa Claus, and nobody believing that he is a Santa Claus having to convince Joe that, hey,
not this Joe, it's Joe, who is a... Basically, a guy running a kids' TV show.
Yeah, it's like some children's museum that he's working at or something. So, you know, although I will say that the Christmas horror movie, like Santa's Sleigh or whatever that was, like, I feel like that should be a thing.
Yeah, it's like at one point his like studio is trying to convince him to give up the whole kid actor thing and become and do a Christmas horror movie. That the real Santa Claus is so offended by, he punches the agent or whatever that's like suggesting.
Yeah, the director, like, you know.
But if anyone who briefly doesn't know what Ernest is this character played by Jim Varney, who's just like an everyday American idiot. You know, he was famous from like doing this idiot character in all these commercials and stuff, and then it became its own movie, spawning 6 or 7 movies, which we'll probably discuss at a future date. But in this one, Ernest is a taxi driver and picks up Santa Claus as he's in Orlando to try to find this actor to convince him to become the new Santa Claus. And hilarity ensues. Santa loses his magical sack that can basically create any toy, and it's up to Ernest to kind of save Santa Claus because no one thinks he's just a crazy old man. He ends up getting thrown in jail, and at one point this like runaway orphan kid steals the sack, and it's just weird.
Yeah, pretty much anything that can go wrong in this film, it happens. And you know, but the way it's portrayed and everything else, I mean, I genuinely got some laughs out of it. Like, you know, not a terrible film. Not your traditional holiday film. But, I mean, you know, this is one that you could sit down with the family. I mean, there's no cussing or over-the-top violence or anything. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean...
And it's, like I said, it came out in 1988. It's like a... Was
and all the different good roles that, you know, you see...
80s movie.
You know, Jim Varney, I mean... I think that, you know, the character where he dresses up as the old lady, like, I'm pretty sure that set the stage for Miss Doubtfire later on. Like,
or, you know, I mean, before Eddie Murphy was playing 15 different characters in a movie, Eddie Murphy, I mean, Jim Varney was doing this in his movies. I mean, he was a great character actor that could do all those different.
I mean, I think one of the biggest ones is he pretends to be like this detective or this politician or something, and does a surprise like inspection, to break Santa out of the jail. And yeah, I mean, it's just like spot on, and it's kind of cool seeing Santa like having all the inmates like fucking singing Christmas carols, and like the inmates are convinced that yes, this is the real deal, but nobody else in society is. So
that's like a trope in old Christmas movies, is Christmas or Santa comes to town and people are always convinced that he's like not Santa Claus, that he's some kind of crazy old man who in the course of the movie has to convince everybody that Christmas is real. Which, if there was a real Santa Claus dropping off presents, how do people like not realize he is real? doesn't make sense as a plot point, because if Santa's been doing his job all this time, wouldn't you just believe he's real? Are adults like, just taking credit for Santa Claus's delivery? That's what I'm.
I mean, I think that's a thing, right? I mean,
yeah, like all this time we're convinced that it's our parents that have been putting out the gifts and stuff, but maybe there really is a Santa Claus, and parents are just taking advantage of free toys and. Saying, yeah, I got that for you.
I will say probably one of the funnier moments is, basically Santa has his, sleigh and the reindeer's ship. So, like, there's this warehouse facility, and apparently, the reindeers break out of the little crate. So, they're on the fucking ceiling and just, all over the place. And at some point, the two attendants, they end up, calling animal control with a reindeer problem, and animal control walks in and, they're like, we don't see any reindeer. And, you just kind of see the guy's eyes glance up and they, the animal control people look up and they're like, flying reindeer? No. You want the, airport control or some shit. This isn't animal control at this point.
Why would Santa have to ship his reindeer? They can fly. Why did he have to depend on FedEx? Or for that matter, why did he have to fly to Orlando? Can he just jump in the sleigh and took care of it?
I don't know. Maybe that's part of losing the whole Christmas magic. Maybe that's why he had to, pass this torch and
trying to stay low key, keep it under the radar.
And I will say that, the fact of Ernest driving Christmas, the fucking sleigh was awesome, where they end up in outer space and all kinds of shit, because it's and he, for the life of him, he can never remember Blitzen's name.
Start making up his own name.
Yeah, because apparently, that's how you
on
start
Barney,
this.
On Jimmy.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a relatively funny movie, but, I'm a Jim Varney fan. I mean, I kind of grew up on, my grandma introducing me to a lot of his films and stuff of that nature, just because they are, for the most part, kid-friendly. And I don't know. I mean, for all the hate and everything, I mean, fuck those people.
Exactly. All right. Next up on our list of bad Christmas movies. Have you ever seen a little film called Fred Claus?
You know what? I have seen this film, but it has been a while. I did not have a chance to go back and watch this one recently. but
yeah, Vince Vaughn and Paul Giamatti came out in 2007, directed by David Dobkin. And basically, it's about Santa Claus had an older brother. And as many older brothers, when you get a younger sibling, you think, my parents love him more than me, and you get
all is lost.
Yeah. And especially when your younger brother is Saint Nicholas. The probably the most perfect person in the world. So no matter what you do, freaking your little brother is going to do it better because he's freaking Santa Claus.
What if Santa Claus's little brother was Jesus? That would be a hell of a competition.
It's kind of like Monty Python's, what is it? The Life of Brian. it's pretty much what this is. Yeah, so you see the kid version of Vince Vaughn. Freaking when his brother is born, he's like a little baby, and he comes out, he's like, ho, ho, ho. And of course, Vince gives him a present, and then he turns around and gives all the presents that he got to orphans. And it's all kind of just like every time he does something, you know, his brother has to do something like amazing to the point where for all his good deeds, he becomes a saint. Of course, you know, Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus. And apparently part of this thing of him becoming a saint, all his family is frozen in time. They never age. So it jumps from old time Germanic tradition to modern day America where he's grown up, he's Santa Claus, and his brother, Fred Claus, is a repo man. So his brother's Damn. Giving out shit, and he's taking stuff away just because, you know, and he's kind of turned into a scumbag because he, you know, hates his whole family.
Yeah, so, I mean, I remember at one point, like, Fred gets arrested and, you know, ends up calling Santa for some bail money, and, you know, Santa's like, I'll give you the bail money, and, you know, there's something about a quick rich scheme.
Yeah, he wants $50,000 to invest in something that he thinks is going to make him, like, rich and stuff. So he's like, if you want the $50,000, you have to come to the North Pole and work for me.
Yeah.
Which, not that good of an idea.
No. So basically, you know, Nick, what was it? He gives him like 3 strikes or something. Like, if you fuck this up, you're out. You're done.
Well, unfortunately, while Vince Vaughn, Fred's character, is visiting, Santa gets a visit from a, efficiency expert, played by, famous actor,
I love these moments where it's been such a while.
But anyway, this efficiency expert is like, you know, if Santa screws up, he's going to shut down Christmas.
Oh, Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey, who always plays a great villain. And he's, you know, intentionally trying to like stir up shit so Santa will, because he hates Christmas and wants Santa to get shut down. And of course, you know, Fred being there just kind of screws everything up. You know, he convinces the elves to like party and stuff, so the whole, you know, warehouse gets jacked up and they get behind, and Santa ends up getting into like a fight or something and hurts his back, so now he can't even deliver the presents. And
I'm gonna stop you right there.
Yeah.
Just because that's ludicrous, and Ludacris was in this film.
Yes. Ludacris played a DJ elf that played
DJ
the midget.
DJ Donnie, yeah.
Yeah, the music at the factory to keep the workers, like, you know, happy while they're working. And, like, him and Fred get into, like, a fight at one point because he's playing the same, like, holiday crap, like, over and over again.
So, yeah, that's about the highlights that I remember from this movie.
And, you know, Santa's Little Helper was, like, super hot, too. One of the elves is in love with her, and yeah, she's like the only like full-sized woman there other than Mrs. Claus, and it's
Was that was Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks. But yeah, since Santa's injured, the only one, because according to the rules it has to be a Claus delivering present, so he eventually has to get Fred to deliver all the gifts. Which, you know, Fred finds, you know, his holiday spirit because, you know, one of the reasons why he hated his brother, because he used to always, you know, when his brother was getting on his nerves, would run up and climb his tree and talk to a bird. Well, Nick, trying to have a good idea, he decides to cut down the tree to make a Christmas tree out of it. And he's like, you love this tree so much, now we can have it indoors. And, you know, the bird's house gets crushed and the bird, like, flies away. And so he loses his little friend, but... Yeah, you know, so, you know, Fred's like, screw you, I'm glad Christmas is over with. It goes home, but he still gets a present from Nick, and it's like, he's rebuilt the birdhouse. And he's like, yeah, sorry, I'm a pain in the ass. Love, Nick, you know, and he gets his Christmas spirit back, and he decides to come back and deliver all the presents. But Kevin Spacey cuts off the navigation system and, you know, trying to screw Christmas over one last time. And Santa finally realizes that not all naughty kids are actually naughty. Some of them just, you know, had weird childhoods and realized that the whole reason this guy hates him is because he made the naughty list and didn't get his present, which wanted to be a Superman cape, which was hilarious because Kevin Spacey also played Lex Luthor. Yes. So he finally gives him his his Superman cape that he's always wanted, and Christmas is saved because everybody's happy. Fa la 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 la.
La 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 la. All right.
And I gotta say, I'm a fan of Vince Vaughn. He plays a good dick in movies, but yeah, it's being a dick in a holiday movie is just, yeah, it's just not the best thing in the world.
Even us assholes have to have limits at some point where you just gotta put on the nice guy.
Much like Arnold Schwarzenegger should not make comedies, Vince Vaughn should not make family comedies. Stick to the adult humor you're good at.
Find that niche, stick with it. That's your sweet spot. You deviate from the sweet spot, it's going to be bad.
But I would say the highlight of this movie, if you got to, the good within the bad is Paul Giamatti as Santa Claus. Him as like a jolly fat elf is hilarious. I mean, it's perfect role for Paul Giamatti.
Damn. Is that a career highlight? Like, you would make a sweet fat elf.
I mean, Paul Giamatti's been in a lot of things, and I tend to enjoy the characters he played, but him as Santa Claus, it works. It was the role he was born to play.
Sweet. Alrighty.
So what do you got next on your holiday shit list?
All right, so I watched this film the other night, and I don't know, it wasn't all that great. I don't know that I've seen it before. Called Christmas with the Cranks. Like, I typed in bad Christmas movies, and this made every list. Like,
yes.
It didn't matter if it was a top 10, a top 20, a top 100. This movie was in it, and you know, I haven't quite figured out what it is. For me, it was weird. Stars Tim Allen, and I'm an old TBS viewer, so I remember Tim Allen as Tim the Tool Man Taylor.
Yeah.
Like, not Tim the dickhead, oh, my dollar's going off to college, so no need to do Christmas this year. Let's take that money and put it toward a cruise.
And with also Jamie Lee Curtis. Apparently, everyone in this town like loves Christmas, and normally they put on a big Christmas thing, have a giant Christmas party, decorate the house that their street always wins, like the city Christmas award for best decorated street. And since his daughter, who has joined the Peace Corps, is supposed to be away in Peru on a Peace Corps mission during Christmas, they're like, let's take all this money that we normally spend on this and skip Christmas this year. We're going to go on a cruise. So what they don't realize is them skipping Christmas has an effect on the whole town. Like, you know, their neighbors are protesting their house because since they're not cooperating, they're not going to be the street's not going to win the award for best Christmas. The Boy Scouts hate them because they didn't buy a tree from them this year that helps them pay for their thing.
The cops didn't like them for refusing to buy the calendar.
Yeah, the local stationery guy like didn't get their big order for Christmas cards and invites to the party this year. Even the local butcher, like, you know, they didn't get their big holiday party food order. So it like affects the whole town pretty much. They're not doing their usual Christmas thing. So literally the whole town hates them and tries to force them to celebrate Christmas.
Yeah. And it was weird too. Like, it was because like the only like big thing is like, apparently Frosty is huge. Like, Their household, I guess, is, you know, always has a Frosty on the roof. And, like, you see all these kids. And it was funny, too, because one of the kids is the same little kid from Malcolm in the Middle. The little blonde-headed kid.
Yeah.
Like, probably not even a fucking kid anymore. Like,
he's probably in his 30s.
Yeah. But anyway, he plays a character, Spike. And, you know, it was kind of cool. You know,
I do like the fact that one of the things they do to them to try to convince him to celebrate is they keep sending carolers over to his house.
Yes.
So he takes the hose and freezes his front yard. So when they try to step on his property, everybody slips and falls.
Yeah. And it was crazy because they get the cat. And, like, you know, Tim's been a dick to this cat, like, throughout the entire movie. So you see the cat, like, frozen in place and, like, the only thing moving is its eyeballs.
Yeah, but then at the last minute, his daughter's plans get canceled, and turns out she's like met some dude on this trip, and she's going to get married, and now she's coming back for Christmas. So
Which,
they're trying to scramble and do all the Christmas stuff they normally do on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, this movie basically plays out in two phases. One, we're canceling Christmas, and then two, Christmas is on the day before all of, you know, the daughter's set to arrive. So basically, like, you know, the whole Hickory Hill ham thing, like, you know, in the supermarket where it's like a freaking drag race, her and, you know, this lady with a cart, and she ends up taking out like an entire display of shit to try to get the last ham, and like finally gets it or makes a big contribution to somebody's like college fund. Like we were talking about previously with the Tickle Me Elmo, like pays a ridiculous amount of money for said ham only to have it like fall out of her hands or some shit like that and get ran over by a Mack truck.
Yeah, and at one point, like, the only tree left is, like, almost like the tree from the...
Oh, it's a Charlie Brown Christmas tree, no doubt.
Pretty much. So he ends up trying to buy or rent a Christmas tree off of one of his neighbors that's going to be out of town. And so when he's moving this tree, like, the cops show up because they think he's robbing the place.
Yeah, the little kid helping him, like, disappear. So, you know, eventually the kid comes back and is like, look, we had a key. It's not a robbery. Like, well, that's weird as shit. What's really going on here?
Yeah, and eventually the town found out what's really happening, that they're trying to save Christmas for their daughter, and everybody chips in, and it's a feel-good time. You know, the Christmas spirit is renewed and whatnot.
Yeah, but, I mean, it had its laughs. I don't know. I don't think that was the best role for Tim Allen, personally. I don't think I would have... I don't know. It was just weird seeing him in that light, and I'm not used to seeing that, so...
And later on, he goes on to play Santa Claus himself in three movies called The Santa Claus, because he accidentally kills Santa Claus and is forced to take over the role, which I don't know how that turned into three films.
Wow, I'm surprised none of those made the list. Like, were they? Did you see any of them? Were they good films?
I saw the first one. And it was actually a pretty good, you know, like I said, I don't watch a lot of family movies, but it was, I mean, it was on TV, I watched it, it was fairly good, and it was kind of funny, because he's like a ad executive, and once he becomes Santa Claus, like, all the traditional Santa Claus things happen to him, like, he gets really fat and grows a beard, and he can't, like, as much as he works out, he still doesn't get thin, he, like, shaves, and, like, a minute later, he has a full beard again, so everyone who around him that doesn't know he's Santa Claus just thinks he's... you know, going crazy or eating far too much because he's just getting, like, total Santa Claused out. And, yeah, so that was...
Man, that'd make for a whole, you know, a hell of a no-shave November. Like, oh!
Yeah, if you can grow an instant Santa beard.
It almost reminds me of, I don't remember the commercial. Anyway, like, there's the competition, and, like one of the competitions is growing a beard or something, and you just see, like, the Viking or the big Scottish guy is like, and, like, the beard just pops out. It's like, and damn.
I think the second one, if I remember correctly, was that part of the Santa Claus is there must be a Mrs. Claus, so he has to find a wife before Christmas or he's going to lose his powers as Santa Claus. Yeah, like I said, it's... I would say at least the first one would probably make my list of suggested Christmas movies, but yeah, just stop after that because it gets, like, more and more ridiculous as time goes on.
Absolutely. All right, so what's next, Joe? What should we tell folks to stay away from this holiday season?
All right, I think I will end my list on an heist action movie. One that when many people quote Affleck as being the bad choice for Batman, in their evidence of why Ben Affleck sucks, this movie usually comes up, a little film called Reindeer Games.
Yeah, the trap is set and the game is on.
Yes. It's a movie about Affleck is a car thief, I believe, in prison. Him and his cellmate are... set to get out of prison like 2 days before Christmas or something like that. And his cellmate apparently worked at this casino and gets stabbed and supposedly dies right before they're relieved. So when he gets out, there's this super hot girl played by Charlize Theron who had been writing letters to it was like a prison pen pal. But had never met the guy, so Affleck's like, hey, I've been in prison. I'm going to try to get some. And decides to pretend to be his cellmate and hang out with his girl for a little bit before he goes home. Well, it turns out...
It's all a trap!
Yes. Her boyfriend, who claims is like her brother that is trying to force her to do this, they want to rob the casino that his cellmate worked at and use his knowledge of the casino to break in. So Affleck, to keep from getting killed when they find out he's not the actual guy.
Can I just stop you right there?
With this whole theft scheme, yes.
So is this a holiday version of Ocean's 11? Is that what I'm hearing?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Oh. So yeah, they rob an Indian casino dressed as Santa Clauses on Christmas Eve. And it all goes bad.
And at some point, somebody gets naked.
Yes, that like I said, there's good in all movies, and probably the only highlight of this film is that there's a couple sex scenes with Charlize Theron, where she gets topless, which I said, good with the bad.
Ho ho ho!
Literally,
and that's a wrap.
And the whole thing is like pretty much everyone gets killed except for Affleck, and he just gives all the money away, like literally walking home after he's like escaped these criminals that are trying to blame this whole thing on him and kill him. You know, that's the one thing. He tells them, they're like, yeah, there's this safe in the manager's office called the powwow safe. That's where most of the money's kept. That's the big thing you got to steal. Well, really, the powwow safe is where the manager keeps all his guns. So when they go in there, like, you show us what's in the safe. He's like, okay, pulls out freaking machine guns and like shoots half the crew.
Like, oh, shit.
And like I said, Affleck is on his way as he's walking back home. Is like putting all the money in like mailboxes as he goes, like, and you know, gets home, has his cocoa. He's with his family.
All is well in the world.
Ends well, yeah.
Nice, nice. Well, I think that about wraps us up for the discussion on not so great Christmas movies. So let's talk about some of the crazy or, you know, just different traditions when it comes to, you know, this holiday season. And yes. There was one you were telling me about that literally confused the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah. I found this list of 35 bizarrest Christmas traditions, and there'll be a link to it in the notes. But yeah, let's hit a couple of the highlights here. My favorite is Catalonia. They have a Christmas tradition called the Caganer, which is basically a statue of a guy taking a dump. And it's part of their whole like traditional Christmas decoration. So you will see the nativity scene, and there'll be a statue of a little guy with a Santa hat, whatever, just taking a crap in the corner.
But, you know, let's put this in motion. So this is not to be derogatory or anything of that nature. Like, the whole semblance here is supposed to be based around, you know, fertilization and fertility to ensure, you know, next year's crops or something of that nature. Or was that just some BS story that you made up to make
no,
this?
That's
okay. So it's a true thing.
That's what the Wikipedia told me. And it's such a big thing over there that you even in like malls, there's a picture I found online somewhere where it's like a mall with like the traditional Santa display. And there is a 2-story statue in the mall of some dude taking a dump. And it's so popular that you can even go online and buy different of these statues that look like celebrities. They have like a Pope, they have a Queen, they have a Yoda. There's a Stormtrooper one. I mean, pretty much any pop culture or celebrity you can find.
A trooper on the pooper.
You can get a pooping version of that for Christmas. And they also have another tradition there called the pooping log, where they decorate a log with a face and blanket on Christmas Eve. The log is placed halfway into the fire and then beaten with sticks. Don't know why. That's just... I didn't delve like any farther into that. It was weird enough on its own.
So we beat a burning log with other wood.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, I've did that around campfires, but that's just to watch the embers rise into the air and stuff.
Another weird Christmas tradition in Austria and some German countries is the legend of Krampus, which is they've just released a Christmas horror movie based off of this.
You know what? I got to say, man, I think American children today with their entitlements and everything of that nature, like, we need some of this. Like, I could see European kids, like, literally, like, scared shitless. Like, here it's like, oh, you're going to get a bag of coal. There it's like, nah, bitch, you're going to get eaten.
Yeah, if you're a bad kid, you get kidnapped by the evil Santa Claus, Krampus, and beaten with sticks. That's...
Hey, you know, I'm not condoning child abuse or, you know, anything abusive of that nature, but you know what? A little bit of fear sometimes is a healthy thing.
And that's not the only, like, evil Christmas story. Apparently in Norway, they hide all the brooms on Christmas Eve to keep witches from and evil spirits from stealing them and using them as for transportation.
If she quacks like a duck and floats like a duck, she must be a duck. She's a witch.
And Iceland, they have the Yule Cat, which is said to stalk the Icelandic hills. Those who don't receive new clothes before Christmas Eve are said to be devoured by the mythical beast.
I mean, that ensures that you got at least one funky fresh outfit in your getup. That's it. Wow. Anything with trolls?
Ah, here's one. Greece has the... I can't even pronounce this word, but it's a race of evil goblins that lurk underground, and during the 12th days of Christmas, they supposedly surface and wreak havoc.
Interesting. I don't know.
And, of course, I can't leave America off this list, you know, just equal opportunity. Apparently, the running of the Santas has become a tradition in a lot of cities where they have a giant holiday pub crawl with people dressed as Santa Claus going from bar to bar and getting completely wasted on eggnog and such.
Why the hell can we be a part of that tradition? Move over, Rumsgiving. We now have a Christmas pub crawl.
Which I did see Evan Williams has released their brand of eggnog. So you can get pre-mixed eggnog with Evan Williams. I saw at the liquor store the other day.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's just crazy. It's a big world. Takes all types to make the world go round. So we've talked about the bad of the holidays. Let's switch gears a little bit. What are some of the recommended Christmas films that you would tell folks to see outside of Die Hard?
Well, Lethal Weapon, of course.
Yes.
Gremlins, whatever we talked about last year.
Yeah.
No, I would say probably number one on my list is Scrooged. I mean, it's Bill Murray at his finest. A modern retelling of the, you know, Dickens Christmas Carol, where he plays a TV executive who is just basically a total dick. And he is producing a TV version of the Christmas Carol on Christmas Eve, so all his employees can't go home, and they're doing this whole big thing, and he gets visited by three ghosts during the night.
I mean, that is a good film. You know, I don't know.
Bobcat Goldthwait is in it.
One that I'm seeing a lot, and it's really funny to see the adult Macaulay Culkin, or, you know, I probably butchered his name. But,
Macaulay Culkin?
Yeah, you know, from Home Alone. Like, apparently, like, he did a version of him in his house as an adult, like,
so, I've not seen this,
so that is awesome.
Oh,
but
God.
I mean, the Home Alone films you know, were pretty good, at least that, you know, first one. That was always one that as a kid I was like, yeah, my MacGyver skills are strong.
I didn't watch a video recently where they had ER doctors watch Home Alone and chronicle the injuries that they would have received if this actually happened.
That's awesome. Like, that's going to result in a lesion to the upper dossier.
like this would have probably resulted in a cracked skull. These guys would not have lived through this. Let me see what
you know. One that you know is really big and. Our household, at least, is, you know, Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas. Like,
yes.
You know, I'm not really sure if it's a Halloween, if it's a Christmas, or, you know what? I don't even care what the season is. Like, I never get tired of this movie for some reason. Like, it just, it's one that, you know, I believe has stood the test of time. And, you know.
Didn't they, like, re-release it with a different Like someone redid all the music a few years ago. Who was it that did the new music?
Well, Manson did. You had Manson that did This Is Halloween. Fiona Apple did a really amazing version of Sally's Song. I mean, just that entire like updated artist lineup, I was like, holy crap. But
Have you seen the new theory that if you watch like the Tim Burton animated movies in reverse order, it's a trilogy? Like Frankenweenie is like the first one. The Corpse Bride is like the second one, and then
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, is like the last one. It's all the same character.
You know what? I could see how that works. Yeah, I have not did that, but no, I definitely see where people are catching on to that. Like that would be awesome. So the story is told in reverse.
Yeah, because basically Jack Skellington is the kid who tries to bring his dog back to life in the first movie. And then in the second movie, there's that, skeleton dog. Yeah. And then it's even in The Nightmare Before Christmas, there's still that skeleton dog. So yeah, that's supposed to be his dog through the whole thing. And then, like I said, that the Corpse Bride, the kid's grown up, and then at the end, it's Sally and Jack.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, that was a weird Christmas theory I recently stumbled across. One on my list, too, is Bad Santa. If you need a good laugh, Bad Santa is probably the funniest Christmas movie, if you can call it that, I've seen.
And wasn't there a sequel, Badder Santa, too? Or am I...
It might have been a direct-to-video, because I know they released an unedited version. I think it was called Badder Santa. But I'm not sure if there has been a sequel to it. But yeah, that movie is just insane.
Yeah, no, there definitely was. Yeah, it came out in 2003. Yeah, winning. Man, this internet thing is dangerous. I think another one is National Lampoon's Christmas. Like, I'm a big fan of, pretty much everything National Lampoon. Like, all of those movies to me are...
Shitter's full.
Yes. Hilarious. So, that one's a big one that I can recommend to folks.
Oh, and when the cat, bites the Christmas lights and gets fried. Yes. And there's just that burnt stain in the carpet that's outlined by hair. It's like a shape of a cat. Oh, man.
I mean, we did touch about them, but, Gremlins, Die Hard, I mean, those are all, I don't know, a little bit deviating from Christmas, but they all take a place around, the holiday.
And if you need music for your holiday party, go check out our un-Christmas song Christmas list we made on YouTube. It's like Cigar Nerds Christmas. You just look up that on YouTube. You'll find it. We've posted it on our site, but we made it last year and it's still there. So if you need some weird Christmas music, go check that out.
Yeah, and I think we've even made some additions to it since then. So I don't know. I mean, that just goes to show you with the holiday, it's a lot of, good traditions, different traditions. There's the good, the bad. I don't know. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I like the holiday season. It's a great opportunity for us to come together to bullshit about topics we typically wouldn't, have, discussed. And
yeah, that's Christmas vacation. Remember the part where he sprays that like super lubricant on his sled. Oh, trying to watch that in slow motion, too, is just hilarious.
Cool, cool. Well, you got any additional thoughts, comments, quips, queries, concerns?
I don't know how we forgot about it, but the Doctor Who Christmas specials. I mean, that's something that, there's always, or at least in the modern Doctor Who run, there's always the Doctor Who Christmas special.
And I feel like there's this one podcast that really focuses around Doctor Who. So
is it Earth Station Who or something?
I definitely believe that would be the one.
I'm sure they've probably done an episode on the Doctor Who Christmas special.
And that's one reason why we typically don't talk in great detail about Doctor Who, so we definitely don't want to overlap. So I think this will make a great opportunity to include a little plug for ESOs.
I was waiting for you to finish your sentence there, but yeah, the Doctor Who Christmas specials, and there's always the traditional family specials that have been going on since hell before we were born. They play every single year.
You know, I mean, freaking Frosty the Snowman, I think that's one. The Little Drummer Boy is another one.
And there's even a Google Christmas horror movies. There is a huge list of Christmas-themed horror movies. I mean, The Krampus just came out. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I was too busy, you know, trying to see Star Wars. But, I mean, I've heard that's hilarious. There's a lot of comedic actors in it. People are comparing it to Gremlins. There's whatever, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Santa Slays, I think is one of them. There's an endless supply if you like horror movies and want to get your Christmas fix to mix a little Halloween with your Christmas. You know, go for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're non-discriminatory here. So do what makes you feel good and what you like.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Cigar Nerd Podcast. It's time for the Blowing Smoke segment, where we sit down and talk to cool people that's got cool things to say. We're here with some special guests from La Vida Habana Cigars. Gentlemen, if you'll introduce yourselves.
Sure. My name is Nicholas Siris from LH Premium Cigars, also known as La Vida Habana.
My name is Yannis Katsoupias, a.k.a. The Cigar Tailor.
All right, so tell us a little bit about the LH Cigars. How long have, I know y'all have been kind of in business in a while in other countries, but you're just now kind of getting into the American market.
That's exactly right. We launched last year. We've been in the U.S. now for a little over a year. Our first IPCPR, and that's the big trade show for the industry. my first one was in July. At New Orleans, and that's where we launched our second and more mainstream blend. I say mainstream because from what I see in the U.S. market, I'd say about 25% of smokers out there smoke a full-bodied cigar, 50% smoke kind of in the middle, and then you have the other end, 25% with the with the mild. I wish it was 25 cents. But anyway... it's been, as an, yeah, revolutionize the world. It's been a labor of love. It's been an interesting thing from the first time I've smoked my first premium cigar. Somehow I knew I was going to be in this industry even before my past life in the electronics business for 20 plus years. It was an instrumental role in clicking and connecting with clients of all walks of life. It's been part of my professional life, so for me, it seemed just a natural, organic thing for me to do is get into this business. It wasn't my initial plan. I knew I was basically, such as yourselves, just really into the cigar and into the culture and the experience and the camaraderie. And, you know, if you're passionate about something and if you make it your life's work, man, then it's work.
It never feels like work.
Then it's not work, exactly. Yeah. So even though, you know, it's work, there's no question about it. But, you know, I love it, and I can see doing this till I'm, you know, in the grave, 80, 90, whatever. Hopefully I live that long. But
and we kind of hear that a lot from when we talk to some of these guys behind different brands. It's like normally everyone else started somewhere else. They're like, you know, lawyers in electronics or accountants or whatever. But then they're like, I just wanted to do something I loved, and... you know, they turn their hobby into a profession and a business. And yeah, you know, we're trying to do that. We just haven't figured out how to get paid for it yet.
Well, you know, it's a slow road, but if you stick to anything, you know, that you love to do, you get there. You know, being of Greek descent, you know, my father was very traditional. My parents, you know, I was supposed to be a doctor. There was no other question about what I was supposed to do. And obviously it didn't go that way. But I did it a little differently. Having that in my genealogy, I told my son at a very young age, you can be whatever you want to be in life, but there's just one thing you have to do.
It's not what my dad said.
Well, you were old.
My dad said, you got two options. You can become a lawyer
or a doctor.
Work at the restaurant.
Oh, I was either a lawyer or a doctor. Lawyer being the second consolation prize. Or actually, no, I was supposed to be a doctor. My middle brother was supposed to be the lawyer. And then my youngest brother was supposed to be the engineer. Well, they got one for three. My youngest brother is an engineer. No, I'm the new school of Greeks.
You're an engineer. You're an engineer of
many
cigars.
Many things.
There you go. Doctor of cigarology.
There you go.
Yeah.
But, you know, my kid, I don't want to talk too much, but, you know, I told him, be what you want to be. And I think if my parents had done that, I don't know. Who knows? You know. But just be the best and love what you do, and then everything follows.
I think if your parents would have said that, you would have become a doctor.
Very possibly true.
Because you weren't pushed.
That's
and
true.
You would have been like, oh, I might as well do this.
You know what? You never know. All my relatives in Greece, and I don't know if it's because their parents all told them to be doctors, but they're all doctors.
So. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but
that's cool, man.
It's early, so I want to be funny.
Yeah. We try to be.
Am I not funny? Is that what you're saying?
No. You're definitely funny.
All right.
So have you noticed a difference between the American cigar market versus the Middle Eastern and other countries you've been dealing with?
Oh, yeah. To put it very bluntly, it's Cuban versus, and unfortunately, most other places. I mean, it's starting to turn now, but they look at it as Cuban and then fake. That's what they'll call it. And I'm talking any country. You know, you'd go into a country, oh, is that Cuba? Oh, it's Dominican? Oh, it's fake. What does that mean, fake? Now it's changing, of course. Now it's changing. Now they're really starting to embrace the non-Cuban brands in the other parts of the world. It's still in the infancy stages. And as hopefully the embargo ends at some point, I believe it's going to become a level playing field. I mean, yes, Cuban tobacco is fantastic, but so are tobaccos from many other, 80 other tobacco-producing countries. And just as you have wines from different regions and they're all good in their own way, the same thing will happen. So I think what will happen is the aura that surrounds the Cuban cigar and how magical it is. And it is. I'm not going to tell you, there's some people that say, oh, it's not as good. I tell those people, did you smoke a real Cuban? Because it is good. It's true. Not to take anything away from the non-Cuban brands and the non-Cuban cigars that exist out there.
The common or average cigar smoker most of the time has never really had a true 100% puro.
Because even if you can find a Cuban around here, the odds of it being fake are pretty
very
high.
Good. Like 90%.
Unless you know where you're getting it from. But, I mean, Dominica, Nicaragua, and all that stuff make some great cigars. I mean, it's to call them, fake is just... Well, you can get, just as good a cigar from... Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that we can't get Cubans just kind of adds to the mystery.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a nostalgia there.
If you were smoking them on a regular basis, then you could compare them a little bit better.
Absolutely. And the other countries have definitely evolved. I mean, when Nicaragua first came on the scene with their tobaccos, they were so strong. And I explained it where they just, it was, the soil is so volcanic and so mineral rich that maybe they weren't fermenting it enough, but they've gotten it down now where it's tremendous tobacco that comes out of Nicaragua. And I think in a lot of ways, I don't know statistically, but it surpassed a lot of the Dominican tobacco that's out. The Dominican was kind of the go-to country that everybody went after Cuba. But now you have so many different countries that are producing such amazing tobaccos, and it's an evolved evolution and also technology. And there's just a lot, believe it or not, there's a lot of technology that goes into a cigar and science. And, the first generations and the early tobacco farmers and brands and producers were, yes, of Cuban or Latin descent. But there have been some trailblazers that have paved the way now for Greeks, Indians and total. I mean, Rocky Patel. I mean, I think he was the first to really be let into the, you know, the good old boys club. Because prior to that, if you weren't of Cuban descent or if you weren't, you know, a Latino, then you didn't know anything about cigars.
It took him a while, but he broke down the barrier.
Yeah, and how can you possibly know anything about cigars if you're not Cuban? So there's people that have proven, you know, many years before I've entered the game that it's possible. It just have to, again, I think it's about having a passion.
Taking for the time and having the passion for what you do. So, like I said, we're trying the LH Maduro, and I got to say, so far, I'm really enjoying this cigar. What's your cigar catalog look like, the difference?
Well, what you're smoking is my first blend that I introduced, and there's a whole story about how I got to this cigar that maybe we can get into, but very full-bodied, but again, as I was saying prior, it's non-aggressive and very smooth, very complex, using a lot of different tobaccos. The wrapper, all my wrappers come from Ecuador. The one you have is an Ecuador Criollo and a Maduro. I use a Peruvian filler, a Nicaraguan binder, and then I use a little Brazilian Ligero.
That's where the smooth comes in.
The spicy.
Smooth and sexy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So yeah, I really prefer I smoke a lot of Maduros. I don't know. I just like it. I tend to go toward the more full-bodied, spicier cigars, but I do like some that aren't just all strength, but have a lot of flavor and complexity to them. So it's not just a kick in the teeth. And this one definitely is a great balance.
Well, there's another misconception about Maduros that they have to be strong. In fact, there's a lot of Maduro. I mean, it's a sweet.
Yeah, normally it's like I said, a sweetness, and then sometimes some blends you'll get a little bit more of that strength with a sweetness.
A lot of people, the general public, believe that, oh, if it's Maduro, it's a strong cigar, yeah, and I want to stay away from it. It's also aesthetically pleasing to many people in the other countries overseas that I'm in. I have a difficult time selling a non-Cuban. A non-Maduro stick. So if it's Maduro, it fits their, the first thing, you know, you have to please all the senses. The first thing is the eyes and, you know, the look of the cigar, you know, the richness of the wrapper, the oiliness, then the aroma that comes off that stick. And that was very critical for me to make sure that, you know, my blends and my brand had that aroma right off the bat. And I think I've hit it there because that's the best thing for advertising.
We've been with people that are smoking the cigar, and you know, other people come by, and they're like, what is that beautiful aroma? And then, you know, it creates that buzz right there. And I think that's one of the biggest things. I've been smoking the Maduro all week, and I never, you know, I smoke in my car all the time, but it always smells bad, even using sprays, etc. But man, I get in the car now and I'm like, oh, this is the best smelling thing I've ever had.
I'm sure your girlfriend doesn't feel that way.
I don't have a girlfriend.
Well, that helps.
Okay, we might need to edit that part.
Yeah, I mean, because I've got, you know, friends and family that are not smokers and are, you know, traditionally don't like smoke. But when I come smoking by a good cigar, they're like, that actually smells good. I wouldn't mind being around that. It's not a cigarette or a cheap cigar.
I mean, you know, I get a lot of people that'll, you know, aunts, uncles, things of that nature that'll be, you know, walking by and they'll be a non-smoker, like you said, and they'll be like, man, that smells like, you know, my grandfather. You know, I mean, I think there was a big generation gap, and a lot of people look at me and, you know, wow, you're a young guy and you're into cigars and yada, yada, yada. There's a, you know.
I remember those days. I was walking into a shop. I was 18. I was buying cigars. And everybody, all these old guys looking at me like, who the fuck are you? You know? And I just kept going day after day. They give me all the shit. And I still go to that shop, you know, 12, 13 years later. And I've embraced, all those guys embraced me. And I'm, you know.
I mean, it's almost like now. Family. You know, once you.
Yeah, there's definitely been.
Familia. That's how it is.
Been a resurgence of cigar smoking lately, because like you said, when I first started smoking cigars, it was a bunch of old guys in the shop, and like now I'm the old guy, and there's a bunch of college kids in there
and
smoking.
And you start talking to them about cigars, and then you have these younger kids, younger generation, man, they're so adamant about cigars and pipes, and they really like the culture and the subculture, and it's what it's all about.
It's what drew me to the business. You know, we were saying earlier today, it's something about this leaf that, going back to the early days of you know, the Indians that originated, the Tonto Indians, and then even the American Indians with their peace pipes. Somehow people would check their luggage at the door. You're sitting down at a table like we are, all different walks of life, but yet we have this common bond, and it forms fast friends. Without this cigar, it would be a lot harder. And I think it just breaks down barriers and makes people become friendlier to one another.
Every time I traveled for my old, you know, work and job, the first thing I'd look for is, okay, where's the cigar shop? Where's the cigar bar? That's where I'm going. And you meet, you know, some of the most unique people in all walks of life. It's just, it's a really cool thing. There's no other real industry that you can actually be of any descent, of any background or belief system, and walk into a cigar shop and just be one with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, having this one thing in common, you know, going to a cigar shop or a cigar event just really connects people. I mean, and if we didn't have this one thing in common, you know, you might never meet or talk to these, you know, people out in the real world. But the fact that you both enjoy a fine cigar gives you that opening to find other, you know, avenues of connection.
And, you know, you're like, oh, what are you smoking? I've never seen that before, or whatever the case may be. And you guys start talking about a cigar, and then that's just how it starts. Then you meet friends and make friends for life. It's funny, as I've gotten older, all my friends that I grew up with, close with, right? But all my friends now smoke cigars. And I think about it, and you meet people that don't smoke cigars or girls, and they're like, oh, it's like, all your friends smoke cigars. Is that all you do all the time? And I'm like, pretty much, yeah.
I mean, there's a, you know, like everybody's saying, there's a whole network behind it. I mean, you know, I've sat there and talked with everybody from CEOs to military generals, and, you know, just, it's crazy. People that you typically, if you were on the same street standing next to each other, that conversation wouldn't have happened.
For the most part, the people that are in this industry, I'd say, are in it, again, for all the right reasons. It's a fun industry because everybody enjoys what they do, and, you know, this is a form of entertainment. This is a form of relaxation, so anytime you get people around, you know, we don't make tools for, you know, manufacturing whatever you need in business. This is something that you enjoy and relax with, and it draws people together.
All right. And you were saying off the mic about the 60s. Have you noticed that's becoming kind of a more popular size? It seems like recently that's just kind of blown up. Or is it like a regional thing?
I find that sizes, and historically, there's a cycle. You know, it's a big circle, or there's ups and downs. Right now, the trend, and it's been so for the last 5-6 years, you know, everything's gravitating towards larger gauges. There's certain manufacturers that focus and specialize in larger gauges, and it's getting to what I think to the obscene. You know, you've seen 80-gauge cigars, and I mean, what I find overseas, it was kind of a trendsetter in these larger gauge cigars. So for me, that's why my 60 was so popular. In the U.S., I find pockets, and then there's, you know, certain shops that specialize. You know, I'll go to some shop and go, you know, 6x60s are our most popular size. Other shops will say we hardly do a 6x60. I find that people, I like to try to differentiate my 6x60 is generally people that like larger gauge cigars or bigger cigars. They have a perceived better value. I'm getting more for my money. Maybe it's a little bit more, but, you know, at least it's a longer smoke. And generally, what I've seen a lot of manufacturers, they kind of make it, all right, well, we got to make a big gauge. And these people that smoke these big cigars, they don't really care about what's in it. Let's just throw some stuff together. Yeah. So I've tried to take the same level of care in making a 6x60 as I do with the other ones and blend it that way. So, and I think there are the discerning people out there in the 6x60. At least there was, you know, there is overseas, and I'm sure they're here in the States.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm one of them. I mean, you know, that's...
Yeah. What's your favorite size?
I mean, the 6x60, that's my go-to. If I'm at a shop or, you know, if I'm buying a box of cigars, that's typically the ring gauge. And I think part of it is, you know, when I'm smoking a cigar, I want to feel like I'm smoking a cigar. You know, I don't want it to have the same mouthfeel that a... you know, cigarette or something else. And plus, in my head, it's giving me the excuse that, hey, I know I'm going to be committed to this thing for the next hour and a half, 2 hours, and in the fast pace of life, that's my slowdown.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a 15-minute cigar break. I mean, you've got to have time to sit down and smoke.
I have 30-minute cigar breaks when I drive, and sometimes I pick the wrong size, and I end up being a little more high than I need to be.
You know, what you said was key. What got me very interested in the cigar when I first started smoking cigars was that I'm kind of not a relaxed type of guy, and so for me, I knew when I was going to light a cigar, I had to block out an hour, hour and 15 minutes at least to do nothing else but relax and smoke a cigar. Now, of course, I smoke everywhere, so that's out the window, but I still remember those, you know, tranquil times. And then for me, of course, it's the whole other element. It's a social thing. So being around other people, that's a different type of enjoyment with a cigar. And I also can find sitting, you know, by yourself, having a cigar, lets you really, like, think back on the day or the week and plan out your life. And it's cool. Both sides of it are very good.
Yeah, I remember when I first got into smoking, it was like the, you know, I guess like the 5x52 or the 55, the skinnier cigars was the what everybody had, and now it just seems
like... Wait a minute. You just said 52 is a skinnier cigar.
Well, it's skinnier compared to this.
Do you realize that just a few years ago, and I mean like even 10 years ago, 52 was considered a monster.
Yeah.
In Cuba, a 50 gauge was the largest gauge they had, you know, and that was considered, whoa, that was crazy.
Yeah, because when I first got into smoking, that was like considered the big cigar, so that's what I normally would go for, and like now that's considered a medium size.
At best. It just keeps going.
And now it's getting ridiculous. I had a 70 ring gauge the other day. I was like, my cutter won't even fit this. I gotta get it.
Yeah, I've seen 80s.
I've smoked 100 ring gauge.
I mean, I could like fit that in my mouth.
No comment.
That would be like
no comment.
I mean, you know what cigar I'm talking about.
Oh, the yard long one?
Yeah. It took me 8 hours, but I smoked it.
That thing was insane.
I'm in second place in the country for time. There's one guy, he smoked it for 6, and I have one left, and I was like, maybe I should beat him. Posted on social media.
Because I know the Colonel but had one. He was smoking that thing all day long.
Yeah, the Colonel. Catman.
Oh. So tell us about the other blends. Because the Colorado sounds interesting. I've been smoking a lot of the Habano wrappers lately.
Well, as I mentioned, the full-bodied Maduro was my first blend, and that's what I really initially created. And the initial intent was for the private lounges of La Vida Havana overseas that I'm involved with, and took that cigar. Well, they pretty much the clients took that cigar to other countries and started, started growing legs and organically started just getting all over the world. In the U.S. market, again, I started to mention 25% is the full-bodied. I knew that launching in the U.S., I wanted to have something that was a bit more mainstream. So I came out with the Colorado, which is a Habano wrapper, again, Ecuadorian, and it's a true medium. It's really kind of down the line. And what's great about that cigar is that even if you like a mild cigar, you can kind of step up to that. It'll be a little stronger. And also the full-body guy can have that and still feel satisfied and say, wow, there's lots of flavors and,
It's definitely complex, but it's really good.
Yeah, because if I'm having a session where I'm going to be smoking 2 or 3 cigars in a day, doing 2 or 3 full cigars may not be the best idea. But with a true medium like that, you know, you can smoke more of them and not feel overloaded.
If you start at 7 in the morning, this is my theory, right? You smoke a nice mild cigar, creamy, as they say, some coffee, etc., whatever the case may be. And then you kind of go through your day and you kind of go all the way up. And I remember, I mean, even yesterday, I've smoked 7-8 cigars. So I'll go mild, medium, medium-ish, full. And then for some reason, just for the hell of it, I'm like, oh, let me smoke another one. And it's like a medium one again.
Breakfast of champions.
So my Colorado basically does change a lot as it goes through, you know, the cigar. You know, it starts off, you know, it's a smooth cigar. It's creamy. Initial notes of honey and molasses and tea. Where my Maduro is very spicy. A lot of different tastes of, you know, pepperish, bold coffee, some chocolate notes. So I try to hit different things with both cigars, but they're both complementary in a lot of ways.
Unique. The Peruvian, the filler is definitely something that's unique. It has its own flavor profile, and it's that was the whole point of the brand, is just to be able to create something that's unique and different, and it's not like every other cigar out there.
Yeah, but that, you know, notes of maple and vanilla and the cinnamon, I guess it would be paired well with some bourbon. I'd like to try that one with a with a good bourbon.
It's too early for bourbon.
Yeah.
No bourbon for today.
What? Too early for bourbon?
Hey, well, yesterday was a long day. So I'm going to stick with water for now.
For me also, as a retailer all my life and experience in retail, and then as a tobacconist in the retail, you know, lounges, for me it was important to not be the 5001st brand. I mean, there's quite a number of brands out there. So the last thing I did is wanted to have something that was more me too. So I wanted to make it a little bit different, try to make it unique in the sense that that's why I experimented with so many different tobaccos, and it took me over a year just to produce the first one. Now, granted, I had to get constant feedback from my clientele, who I was originally blending it for, and then also I had a lot of mentors that I would go back to and say, you know, what do you think, this and that, take notes. The first blend took me about 14-15 revisions to get to where I needed to be, and of course also it was a learning experience for me. The second one came a little bit more naturally, and I guess because I got better at it, but I'm really happy with the Colorado. I'm happy with all the blends. Well, initially I also made a Connecticut shade, and the initial idea was that was going to be a mild cigar because people expect a mild cigar.
Yeah.
My initial Connecticut shade cigar is definitely milder than my full and my medium, but it still has a lot of flavors in it. So even though I'm not going to retire the blend, I do, for next year's IPCPR, I plan on coming out with a really nice, flavorful mild as well.
That's one thing I like. If I'm going to smoke a milder cigar, is have a lot of flavor where it's not just, you know, tastes like air. But I don't mind a mild cigar if it has that, you know, nice complex flavors like you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Since we're talking about pairing, I was thinking about it when you talked about the blend, the Colorado. Actually, if you ever had a salted, what is it, sea salt caramel chocolate?
Yeah.
So that actually goes really well, and it balances out. And then on the Maduro, there's a chili flake, a dark cocoa chili flake. It's got a dark dark like 70% cocoa, and then it's got the red pepper chili flake, and then it's Lent makes it in Godiva, and that goes really well. I actually did it the other day.
I have to try
the Maduro. It's a really good cigar because it kind of opens up your taste buds to the flavor, and then you get the sweet spiciness all in one. It's definitely a different experience when you're talking about smoking and eating something at the same time.
Yeah, because one thing people don't really think about when they're pairing cigars, you hear people talking about pairing it with drinks or with a meal, but you don't hear that many people talk about, you know, pairing it with a dessert. And I think, you know, ending a good meal with a cigar with your desserts, you know, pretty cool experience, and yeah, I'd like to see more of that.
For me, one of my favorite pairings, if you call it that, is a port. And, you know, that's kind of known as a dessert wine, a very sweet wine. But something for me, the synergistic effect of having that port wine with a great cigar, it just makes the cigar better and it makes the port better. So that's my
sweet. That's the whole experience about, you know, being able to tailor to the taste. And, you know, people misinterpret smoking cigars and their flavor profile because they ate something that affected that.
Yeah.
And you have to really understand, I mean, tobacco is, it's a leaf, it's a plant. So whatever you intake is going to affect your taste buds. And you have to think about it in that way when you're, so, you know, it really is an experience. You know, I learned early on when I first started smoking full bodied cigars, it wasn't a good idea to smoke them on an empty stomach.
Yeah, I think we've all made that mistake at one time. But,
you know, there's something so satisfying or pleasing when you have a really good meal and you kind of, you go through the whole cigar experience. And I mean, that's part of what I do is be able to take, you know, A, B, and C, three cigars, and you go from one point to another point. And then once you take a bite of something and then you take a sip and it kind of opens up taste buds. And, you know, I really am looking forward to doing the, I like to call the Live in La Vida Habana experience here in Atlanta soon. Hopefully we're going to be in January doing that.
Nice. Yeah, definitely let us know when that happens. We'll share the news. We'll definitely want to come down and check it out. So as we kind of wrap up here, any final questions, Brad?
No, I mean, you know, it's definitely been enlightening. I mean, you know, I've always been big into pairing my cigars with different drinks and alcoholic beverages, but the food aspect of things is one that I've really missed out on. And as somebody that enjoys, you know, spending my days behind the smoker or out by the barbecue and stuff like that, you know, that it's starting to be a gateway where I'm starting to, you know, find myself wanting to get more into that appreciation, you know, like,
let me know. I'll come cook anytime.
Come on.
So
now,
quick question. You're the beer guy. What are you more, you like a stout IPA?
Yeah, I'm more into the, you know, the stouts. I mean, I like my alcohol like I like my cigars, you know,
so
full
sweet,
body and
Sweet Baby Jesus. You know that beer? It's a porter.
I don't think I've had it. Yeah, I think I've heard the name, but
and
I
then there's a peanut butter. I can't even think of it. Sweet Baby Jesus is one. It's a porter. It goes very well with the Maduro. I actually had a friend who loves stouts and porters, and we were together the other night, and he smoked it and drank it, and it was an amazing experience.
Is the Terrapin
the liquid bliss or liquid bliss? Yeah,
yeah, it tastes like, yeah, Reese's peanut butter cups in a beer.
Yeah,
and that went really well.
It's the sweetness that makes that, you know, flavor profile really stand out, and your taste buds are just like on crack, and they just wake up and they're like, wow, here I am to party.
Yeah,
and so I mean, what's your final notes too on the cigars before we do close out?
I mean, my final notes here is, you know, I've really digging this blend. Definitely got some of the spiciness. You know, I'm picking up a little bit of a woody note to it and everything that, you know, I mean, in fact, this cigar is like, man, I want to go fire up the smoker right now and, you know, enjoy another one. I mean, I'm really, really digging this thing.
It's good to hear.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
Yeah, I'm loving that you know, subtle spice kick, and then the, like I said, the notes of the chocolate and the coffee. I mean, this is when I want a Maduro. This is, you know, what I'm thinking about here. I mean, it's that good, you know, spicy and the smooth chocolate coffee flavors. Nice. As well.
So we're new in the, you know, Atlanta market. We've got into a few shops and expect to get into a few more. So you guys definitely support us and go pick up some more sticks.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And before we, you know, tell people where they can find your cigars, or if the, you know, they can follow y'all on social media.
Yes, sure. I'll let you do that.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you. The social media, just remember LH Cigars, you know, LHCigars.com, LH Cigars, you know, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. We're in a bunch of shops all over the country. I have pockets in California, New Jersey, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, but we're still really setting up distribution. Like John said, we just got here a couple days ago, and generally if I get somebody to sit and smoke a stick with me, you know, shop owner, or, you know, they buy it, it kind of has that effect. And as, again, the background as a retailer, I purposely only came out with three Vitolas in all three blends. Because, again, I know that shelf space is very valuable. So if a tobacconist or a shop is willing to give me a little bit of space, it grows very quickly from the two, three. And as I also grow in this industry with the brand, I'll add all the different Vitolas. And that, again, will happen organically. So it's not overwhelming. I'm not going to walk into your shop. I'm not saying it's a wrong philosophy, but I have, you know, 62 facings, and I'd like you to carry 72. And,
yeah.
You know, it's so, yeah, three. Kind of the staple sizes. One of those should fit, and one of those blends should fit into your palate.
All right, and I'm looking forward to being able to pick these up somewhere local eventually. Nice. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I was just going to say, so, you know, definitely check us out, social media, and, you know, we're going to create a movement, and hashtag Live in La Vida Havana.
All right, everybody go follow those people now. I'm going to follow them as soon as we sign off here.
Let me just add something about the name, because, you know, John keeps mentioning this Live in La Vida Havana, and it's catchy, but let's explain the name. You know, the brand is called LH Premium Cigars. The LH stands for La Vida Havana. Why La Vida Havana? Well, the initial luxury high-end lounges that we have overseas are called La Vida Havana, named so because La Vida is the life of Havana. So we're trying to recreate that Havana lifestyle, like the cigar and everything that goes with it, in places where it's not. So LH is La Vida Havana, so John came with this living the La Vida Havana. I like it, though. I like it. It's catchy.
No, I mean, that's an awesome branding. I mean, and that's exactly what we've touched on, you know, in talking about the enjoyment of a cigar and the culture that comes behind it.
All right, and with that, you know, appreciate y'all coming down and hanging out with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
And we'll be right back.
Okay, auditions for the new Earth Station Who co-host. Take one. Go ahead.
Hello, Stonehenge. Who takes the Pandora cup, takes the universe. But, bad news everyone, cause guess who? Ha, listen, you lot you're all whizzing about. It's really very distracting. Could you all just stay still a minute because I am talking?
Not bad. Can you do another? Maybe something less wordy.
He's like fire and ice and rage. He's like the night and the storm in the heart of the sun. He's ancient and forever. He burns at the center of time and can see the turn of the universe and he's wonderful.
Wow, a little dark. Anything a little lighter?
There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes.
Maybe. Got something a little fresher?
I am not a good man, and I'm not a bad man. I am not a hero, and I'm definitely not a president. And, no, I'm not an officer. Do you know what I am? I am an idiot with a box and a screwdriver.
Not too shabby. Can you close this up?
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating over 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. You never know where the TARDIS is going to go next. Earth Station Who podcast can be found at www.earthstationwho.com. Earth Station Who is a proud member of the ESO network. We are up on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace and we are done. Did I pass the audition?
We'll get back to you. Next!
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's time for Beer 30. And this is our special ho 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 holiday Beer 30. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
Wow, that was horrible. So this week we're, throwing it to a local brewery, Jekyll Brewing, out of Alpharetta, Georgia, and we are drinking the Redneck Christmas Stout Ale. And I gotta say, like, this beer, just the aroma, I mean, there's mocha, there's chocolate, there's peppermint, then just a touch of, aroma from the hops, and I got so caught up in the smell of the beer that I haven't even drank the beer yet.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely smells of, like, just chocolate pepper. Reminds me of, like, peppermint fudge at Christmas time. I was like, I was not expecting to smell that when I sniffed a beer.
I gotta say, like, this is, when I hear the name Christmas Stout, this is exactly what, my taste buds, are what I'm, tasting in my head. There's a lot of mocha, there's a lot of chocolate, and there's just a touch of, I would just say spices as a general. Yeah. I'm not quite sure exactly,
It has like a little bit of a like coffee and cream to it.
And I mean, this is almost like a breakfast stout in a way, the way that it drinks.
And with the mocha and the peppermint, it kind of brings out like the roast and chocolate malts in the beer. I mean, it's like I said, I've had other Christmas beers and it'd be like just full of spice. But this is like more of a sweeter, like I said, minty.
I mean, this is a, I kind of hate to say it just because of the condensation behind it, but I could wake up to this beer in the morning, like
pour this on your Cheerios and shit.
I mean, it almost has that equivalent of like a hot chocolate or something like that.
To hell with eggnog, man. I'm drinking this on Christmas.
I mean, fuck yeah. I mean, screw the mimosas. I mean, the world can have their morning alcohol and call it whatever the hell they want. Like, mine's just gonna look like fucking coffee.
I mean, it's got roasted malts and oats and so it's It's like oatmeal. I mean, it's got grains and shit, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we can justify it. I mean,
exactly. So what do you, and this is also a 8% beer too. So it's not a, definitely not a light stout. You drink a few of these on Christmas, you know, you'd be passed out under the tree.
You know, but I,
which I'm is okay. not a bad,
I, you know, I bad think 8% is, you know, a very good ABV. I mean, it's not up there at your 11 or 12 where you drink one or two. So, you know, I mean, I could do a six pack of these or, you know, a couple of bombers and, you know, just be comfortable.
And a shout out to Dawson Fine Wine. That's where I've been picking up a lot of the beers we've been trying lately. And I mean, they have an excellent beer selection. And they're guys up there really know their craft beer and their whiskeys. So if you're in the area and want to pick up something that you don't normally find many places, definitely swing by there. So what are you giving this on the Untappd app?
5, no questions.
I don't think it goes that high, but I'll agree with you. This is like freaking badass. I want to buy a bunch of it so I have it for the rest of the year and not just you know, during the Christmas limited release.
Yeah, I mean, this is out of a lot of the Christmas, you know, release beers that I've tried over the years, this is you know, this definitely makes my top 5.
All right. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News, folks.
Yeah, news.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a shitload about movies, some upcoming things, and yeah, so stay tuned as well as give our final thoughts on the cigars that we've smoked.
Yeah.
So, with no further ado, there was a trailer released earlier this week. And,
a lot of trailers released this week.
Well, there's one that really stood out in my mind, and I don't know, you know, the younger version, the child version of me, just you know, it really got my geekdom going. So, with no further ado, the new fucking Ninja Turtle trailer.
Yeah, dude, I got ridiculously happy at seeing this. I mean, the first Ninja Turtles movie, I was like, eh, whatever. I didn't see it till it came out to video. This one I will see opening weekend. I am freaking so sold on this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once again, it's Michael Bay. So we know partially what we're going to get, you know, just being a Michael Bay film. However, you know, the turtle interaction in this trailer reminded me very much of the turtles from my childhood.
Yeah, I think he has definitely learned his lessons from some of the complaints about the first movie, and he has definitely fully embraced the cartoon, or at least from what the trailer looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, the cartoon, and, you know, I mean, I almost had nostalgia going back to the first live-action turtle movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the way that the turtles interact with one another, and, you know, if you folks haven't seen the trailer, pause the podcast, go check it out. You know, that way you can appreciate everything in its entirety. But, you know, fucking Casey Jones.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if you go back to our Ninja Turtles episode, the three things I said I wanted to see in a new Ninja Turtles movie was Casey Jones, Bebop and Rocksteady, and a freaking Ninja Turtle van. All three of those are in the trailer. I mean, I was like, I think they're listening to the podcast because
they
you know, all those things I wanted were freaking there. I mean, the turtle van even shoots little discs just like the toy did back in the day.
Yes. So
instead of pizzas, it's manhole covers, which would do a lot more damage than flying pizzas.
And, you know, finally, Bebop and Rocksteady, yes. You know, they actually look badass.
So
you know?
Awesome. I mean, it looks just like the freaking cartoon. Except, you know, the cigar rhino may want to talk to them. I think they ripped off his look with a rhino driving a tank. I mean, you know, he may have a lawsuit on his hands for that one.
Yes.
And also, we get Tyler Perry playing Baxter Stockman. If you remember him from the cartoon, he eventually mutated into a fly.
To the wasp or the fly, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he was like the evil scientist. And there's also, you know, a very Avengers-esque scene of these aliens invading the planet. So we could possibly get to see some stuff from Dimension X, a.k.a. Krang in the Terror Dome. I mean, they've not showed that in the trailers yet, but I'm like, it's very possible, or at least setting up for an eventual third movie with Krang. But
I mean dude, we may get to see it the way in this movie. CGI and everything else is going. I bet they could do a badass Krang. Like, I don't know. I that's one villain that I would really, really like to see.
Yeah, like I said, I'm sold on this one. Like I said, I was skeptical on the first one until I finally saw it, and then, you know, it had its problems, but overall I enjoyed it once I finally saw it. But this one, yeah, I'll see this one.
Yeah, opening, I mean, if I forgot the turtles of my childhood and just watched this film and got past the creepy realism of the turtles, that took me a little bit to adjust and get used to.
We've gotten used to it now. Yeah. I mean, they actually kind of look pretty cool.
I don't know. You know, now, you know, Nickelodeon, you were starting to see a whole bunch of the action figures and stuff, and I'm like trying to think back to the action figures and the toys that I had as a kid, and I'm like, this looks nothing like the turtles.
And also, if nothing else from the trailer, it should have a pretty badass soundtrack. Do yourself a favor, look up the Run DMC It's Tricky DJ Fresh remix from the Turtles 2 soundtrack. It's a pretty badass song.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I'm very much like you, just on the first one, but you know what, this one I'm sold. Like, I will definitely make an exception. Oh, yeah. And if it sucks, I am going to probably be done with
I mean, if it's as good as the trailer, I'm sold. And we even get our first look at Stephen Amell playing Casey Jones, or as I heard someone on the internet call it, street hockey Oliver Queen.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I don't know. Super stoked about that one.
For Bebop and Rocksteady alone, I have to see it. It just looks amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, there's really not going to be rhyme or reason. I probably should, you know, discuss this stuff in order that it comes out, but whatever. I mean, another trailer that got released that, you know, looked really badass was the Independence Day 2 trailer.
Yes. And I'm
still
saying,
don't know how I feel without Will Smith, but...
Yeah, I'm saying right now, when we make our schedule for next year, we have to do an Independence Day episode, because... That was one of my favorite movies when it came out. I mean, just and when the first one came out, there was just, I mean, the trailer didn't really show you, like, all the big name actors. And it was just, like, all this explosions and stuff. And then Independence Day. That's all you knew about the movie until, like, almost right before it came out. Like, and it had a huge cast. And from the looks of the trailer, pretty much almost everybody has returned, except, I mean, they didn't show Will Smith in the trailer. He's probably busy doing freaking Suicide Squad or whatever. But yeah, that first movie had so many great quotable lines.
You know, I'd be curious to see if somehow he doesn't make a cameo or shows up in the film or something, yeah, you know,
apparently
just unexpected.
There is a viral website they've set up called Battle 1996 that kind of shows, because this is taking place 20 years later, and we have been using harvesting some of the alien technology to upgrade our defenses. So, I mean, there is like fighter jets in space and all this crazy shit. Apparently, Jeff Goldblum's character is now the head of some kind of like Earth defense agency that have been preparing for any kind of alien return. But the aliens come back with some big ass ships this time around. They are out for vengeance.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, basically the humans have declared war at this point. So, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Pullman's back. Vivica Fox is back. I mean, it looks from the trailer, it looks like pretty much everybody's back on that viral website. Supposedly, they say Will Smith's character died in a training accident with testing some of these new alien hybrid ships. But that could all be a ploy. You know, he may pop up somewhere, you know, unexpected. But, you know, who knows? But, I mean, so far, like I said, the first movie was so, I mean, when he punches the alien in the face, welcome to Earth.
Yes.
And that too. And they, you know, they could not go on the mission unless they had some cigars. Yes. I was like, we got to have our victory dance or the mission's going to be cursed. I mean, hey, cigars and movies, it's on my list. So yeah, I'm super excited to see this one.
And, I guess this is a good opportunity to segue. So you brought up cigars. Let's just go ahead and tell the folks, you know, our final thoughts on, you know, the Colorado cigar that we just had and everything of that nature.
And the Maduro we smoked earlier.
As well
earlier.
As the Maduro that we smoked during the Blowing Smoke segment.
I got to say, I'm looking forward to these cigars being in more stores so we can actually start getting them on a regular basis. And if they're not in the your local shop, you can find them online. There's some online retailers that that are carrying the LH brand. But yeah, the Colorado, phenomenal. I mean, it's a good medium, but it's very, very flavorful. Got a lot of body to it. And like I said, I'm interested if Suzanne get a hold of another one, pairing this with some good rum and seeing how those flavors mix.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Maduro was, I mean, it was an experience of its own. I would say The Maduro, you know, was a little bit more full body, but you know, there was a different answer. You know, I would say with the Maduro, that's my bourbon pairing cigar.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more chocolatey, and it has a good spice kick in the first, but it kind of blends in well as the cigar goes. It's not very overpowering as some super spicy cigars are. It's a great balance of the spice and the smooth chocolatey, creamy taste.
And one thing that, I noticed regarding both cigars is the draw was very, very smooth on both. Yeah,
the construction is very well on both these cigars. They held their ash a really long time.
And then the other aspect was just the aroma. Like, I'd stepped out of the basement and went upstairs and, came back. And, that was the thing that hit me is, I did a double take. Usually I'm, almost desensitized to a lot of the aromas and stuff of cigars just because I smoke so frequently. But these, they really captivated me. And, I was like, damn, that smells good. Like, I don't even want to air out the room or anything of that nature. Like, I'm okay with, this lingering. I mean,
they smelled pretty good before we even lit them. I mean, this is going to be a good cigar to get a hold of as soon as you can find them in more places.
So
go request these so you can get them in your local brick and mortar.
Absolutely. Another trailer that we had the pleasure of experiencing was Point Break, and
yes.
this trailer here, like this, it almost kind of reminded me a little bit of a throwback to Triple X. Extreme action, aspect of things where
first one was, and we should probably do a Point Break episode when that one comes out as well. But, the original was pretty much concentrated on surfing and skydiving, where this one looks like it's all over the realm of extreme sports. I mean, it's like, watching the X Games. There's so many different stuff in it. I mean, there's skydiving, freaking wingsuits, motorcycle tricks.
Basically anything
of course,
that
there is
you've
surfing
watched.
In there, 'cause it has to be, surfing for Point Break. But, yeah, it's like every
really any sport.
Sport
that you could think of where somebody strapped a GoPro to their chest and said, hey guys, watch this, and you're just in awe, like how the hell did they survive?
And it looks like a lot more globe-trotting too. I mean, it looks more like a worldwide action film instead of just the surfer stuff in one location. It looks like their stuff set all over the world.
So I don't know. I mean, that's another film that I'm really looking forward to.
I just want to hear him do the Keanu Reeves line. I'm an FBI agent.
Yes.
And he needs to have like a crazy washed up partner like Gary Busey in the first one.
Yes. So Hateful Eight, that is set to come out Christmas Eve.
So our Christmas Day, maybe.
Well, I saw some tickets available Christmas Eve starting at 6 p.m.
Yeah, there's always like the early show. But yeah, so if you need something to do on Christmas, you can go see The Hateful Eight.
historically, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day are, really, really big days for theaters. I guess, people looking for a break to do from their families or, looking to go to a film with their families or something of that nature. But
yeah, that's usually that my Christmas tradition because I don't like hanging out with doing the big family Christmas. It's like the two things you're going to get on. The only things open on Christmas is movie theaters and Chinese restaurants. So maybe the Waffle House. But yeah, that's it. Eat some Chinese food, watch some movies, and with this movie season, I may be there all day because you got The Hateful Eight, which looks like another badass Western from Quentin Tarantino about a whole bunch of bounty hunters snowed in this cabin, all kind of fighting over like the same bounty, or at least that's what looks like in the trailer, but I mean, it's got Kurt Russell, Samuel Jackson, the guy from Sons of Anarchy, whose name I can't remember. I mean, a lot of big actors in this movie. So, and it's Quentin Tarantino, so you know it's going to be freaking badass action. And also, they're doing a limited release on actual 70mm film. And there's, I think, at least one theater here in Georgia that's going to be doing the 70mm release. So, you know, look that up if you want to see it in traditional film stock instead of the digital stuff we have now.
That would be kind of cool just to get that nostalgia.
Oh, yeah. An old Western that looks like an old Western.
Yes. The way it was intended. Yes. So switching gears a little bit to some video game news. An interesting trailer that I ran across was the Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer. And that was just shown a couple of days ago at Japan's D23 Expo. And, you know, I was always a big fan of, you know, the Kingdom Hearts games. You know, they were fun. I mean, it was always interesting. The character lineups, you know, of Donald, Goofy, Buzz Lightyear, and, you know, everything of that nature. So I'm excited. You know, the gameplay trailer looks really awesome. I mean, it's crazy to think back of, you know, the little bit older platforms. I mean, and, you know, where everything is coming now with the next-gen systems and just the revamped graphics, and it's awesome. So I'm really looking forward to this game. And then a little bit of just interesting news. So up in New York or New Jersey for the Walker Stalker Con event that went on up there, apparently there was a fan that became a little bit too starstruck and, for whatever reason, decided that she was going to bite Norman Reedus. So he survived the zombie apocalypse on, you know, The Walking Dead, but, you know, in real life, not
people,
doing so well.
People, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yes, so, you know, basically the woman tweeted out and was like, I don't know what came over me, yada, yada, yada. I was just in awe, and I guess that was her body's natural reaction or something. Anyway, like,
maybe Norman's she was hungry. She just waited in line too long.
I mean, you know, Norman kind of played it cool. You know, he's not going to press charges or anything. However, the woman did get banned for the rest of the con and, you know, lost two photo ops with them, you know, which were like $100 each or something of that nature. So, you know, people, it's okay to geek out and, you know.
Just don't bite anybody.
Yeah, just try to maintain some level of cognizance, I guess, you know, so that way you don't fuck up the rest of your con experiences.
Yep.
So, you know, with a reputation like that and the way social media is today, like, that woman is forever branded. So any additional news, shout outs, anything of that?
We haven't talked about the Star Trek Beyond trailer.
Oh, I forgot about the Star Trek. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, well, we got a new Star Trek Beyond trailer and it looks weird because, I mean, in the trailer you see the Enterprise getting blown up and it looks like there's all kind of stranded on some kind of alien planet. So, I mean, can you have a Star Trek movie without the Enterprise? I mean, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be different. I don't know. I'm curious to see what the whole behind the scenes story,
but also
is
badass
that
soundtrack in the trailer. Looks like it's going to be a almost like a straight up Star Trek action movie.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things, yeah. Is, you know, it had that upbeat soundtrack, which was actually badass, and then, you know, just really action focused, which I'm not accustomed. I don't typically associate that when I think of Star Trek. So.
Yeah, and the guy who plays Bones too, I love his version of Bones. He's always been a good actor. I wish his TV show, Almost Human, had not got canceled because I thought that was a badass show. But yeah, him as Bones is hilarious. And also, you know, Scotty too. I love Simon Pegg's version of Scotty. I mean, it's going to be maybe a weird for a Star Trek movie, but it looks like it's going to be a badass sci-fi action movie at least.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. You know, I'm... Star Trek was always a little bit difficult for me to get into. I don't know. I guess maybe I came into the game a bit late or something like that.
It can be a little boring, especially if you're a Star Wars fan who's used to a little bit more action in your sci-fi. But, I mean, this looks pretty actiony. And it's directed by the guy who's directed some of the Fast and the Furious movies. So, you know, it's going to be a little different take than what JJ's been doing. But, yeah, it looks like he's kind of up the adrenaline and
action. I mean, maybe that's the thing. Maybe there was an Enterprise race or something of that nature. And, you know, somebody
that's
got a
little bit... That's how they blew up the Enterprise. They lost a drag race.
Got a little
race.
Bit squirrely and, you know, caught the backside of a meteorite or something. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it happens.
Stranger things have happened. I mean, I've experienced that in my own...
Your nitrous overloads and, you blow the engine.
Like, us sitting down playing X-Wing, I mean, it's not uncommon for me to find myself getting taken out by an asteroid or two, so I could see it.
I mean, they've blown up Enterprises in movies before, so it's nothing new, but yeah. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Cool. Well, that's what I got for nerd news, folks.
All right. I want to give a shout out to the ESO network. We had our Christmas party last week and ate at a badass restaurant called Greenwoods on Green Street in Roswell. I was blown away by that. I had like a serious food coma after that place because it's all like old school country cooking. Like everything comes straight from a farm and it's all like made fresh. It looks a little expensive, but then when they bring it out, it's like just giant portions, man. I got like freaking pot roast meatloaf, and like they brought me the whole freaking loaf. Someone else ordered the fried chicken. You get a whole fried chicken. I mean, even the pies are all handmade. So yeah, definitely check that place out if you're in the area. So now that this is kind of our Christmas almost end of the year pod, any final thoughts on the year we've had so far?
The year has been awesome. It has flown by. Like I can't believe that we're already talking about the end of the year. Like it feels like it should just be June or July. It's kind of been a tough year, as a geek/nerd, with some of the losses that we've experienced and everything of that nature. So, as we lose, some of the greats, I mean, there's going to be predecessors filling their shoes and everything. So I'm just, super excited to see, the resurgence of, all the stuff that we're seeing with, comic books, superheroes. I mean, even the throwbacks to retro gaming and stuff of that nature. I don't know, man. It's going to be truly phenomenal. So, I'm really happy where this year's come and gone, and look forward to the next.
And we've not talked about the our impressions of the new Star Wars movie because we're planning to do a Star Wars episode later on. So we'll save any of our impressions for that episode. And as always, check us out at CigarNerdPodcast.com or ESOPodcast.com. We're available on iTunes and Stitcher, wherever fine podcasts are found. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at CigarNerdPod. Check us out on Facebook. Shoot us an email. Tell us we suck. Tell us what we should do or say hi, whatever. And with that, Merry, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Happy whatever you celebrate. Go out, have a good time. Peace out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.